making quite a heavy agenda, and I would ask the members, as soon as we can move through the agenda, the quicker we can be out of here and even enjoy the rest of the day on Saturday.
You want them all in the chair?
Not quite. We're closed, but no cigars. We have one last member here. Okay.
Two.
How are you?
Morning.
Yeah. Certainly, it's beautiful out there.
Oh, yeah.
It's Saturday and I got home, so.
Yeah, I'm good.
It is Saturday.
It's all going to kind of run together, I think.
Yeah. Yesterday was Friday.
How could you tell?
Well, I could tell because I was supposed to be home with my husband on Friday night to watch our normal Friday night. That's the only time we watch TV. But I wasn't there. So I know it's there. I do a big time.
It'll come back to order. I'll remind the House members that we have a fair quorum this morning, so everybody needs to remain in the room until we get this work session finished. Also, 5053, Oregon Department of Transportation, Ms. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 5053 is returned to the committee to adopt an amendment that would take into account increases in fuel tax revenues and authorizations from the passage of House Bill 2082 should it become law. And so we're recommending that you amend House Bill 5053 by adding a new section that says that upon passage of House Bill 2082 or upon House Bill 2082 becoming law, the amounts established for the biennium in Section 2 are changed by the following amounts. An increase in the maintenance program of $3 million. This would reflect increases in additional fuel taxes collected during the biennium. An increase of $30 million for the preservation program, also reflecting increases in fuel taxes for preservation programs. An increase of $7 million for the highway safety program. An increase of $148 million for the modernization program. That reflects the bonds that would be sold under the bond element of House Bill 2082 for the first biennium. And an increase of $431,354 for driver and motor vehicle services. This is to accommodate increases in the registration program. And then a decrease of $2.4 million for military transportation and 25 FTE carries lots of the diesel fuel tax and efficiency savings, and $336,503 reduction in central services, primarily for the, that is also for the decrease in the efficiency savings for the diesel fuel tax. I'm also recommending that you approve $2 million in the non-limited budget for debt service on bonds associated with that House bill, and then to adopt the following budget note. The department shall submit a report to the emergency board for acceptance or rejection of the list of projects to be funded by bonding identified in House Bill 2082 no later than February 1st, 2000. The list attached to this budget report shall be used as a basis for the public consideration in the public process. And attached to your memo is the list that is being, or has been discussed with House Bill 2082. And the last thing on your memo is consideration for an amendment to the budget note on transportation growth management. There is a strong handler here.
Yes.
Frank Wolf from the governor's office. Went to look to see if we could find Mr. Chandler, and I don't want to speak for either of them, but Mr. Wolf has told me that he is more comfortable with this language. Apparently, and I don't know the issue as well as either Mr. Chandler or Mr. Wolf, apparently the problem with the original language would hurt the ability of these dollars to be used for compliance with House Bill 2709, which is the 20-year buildable land supply, and also Senate Bill 122, which has something to do with special districts. I wish one of them would show up.
Well, I was approached yesterday afternoon by Mr. Greg Wolf from the governor's office, and it's the first time I ever heard of this amendment. And I quite frankly told him that I wasn't interested in trying to change the rules of the ball game. The rules were put in there in the budget note by this committee, and for Mr. Chandler to come in at the 11th hour and try to insert a budget note in there without talking to the committee chair or any other person on the committee that I'm aware of. Maybe talk to the co-chair, but certainly, I'm not aware of anybody else being close from Mr. Chandler, and I just don't accept this slight of hand treatment either by the governor's office or Mr. Chandler, either one. And that's my position on the issue. Senator Duke.
Chair, I'm the one here who brought the budget note, and the language the budget note as it is today is really broad. The issue, if you recall, is the old issue of what do you use federal T21 transportation money for? And so the budget note as it exists now says that grants awarded to the TGM transportation road management cannot be funded with flexible service transportation federal funds unless at least 50% of the grant can be expended for transportation-related activities. And yet, land use out of that, as long as it's related to transportation, not siting a grocery store on a county road. I mean, you know, with no impact to the road system. The point was to try to get away from some of the land use stuff unless it is directly related to transportation. So it's pretty broad the way it is, and those other things have nothing, other bills have nothing to do with T21 money.
Mr. Chandler, I would suggest that you might want to consider coming forward. As I indicated to the committee, since the chairperson was never consulted about this proposed revision of the budget note, I'm not too inclined to come in at the 11th hour and try to insert a budget note change. This committee discussed this subject at quite some length, and the language was adopted for a specific purpose. a network to prevent 221 funds from being used for other purposes other than the signage. And now all of a sudden we're changing the rules of the game. You want to address the issue?
Mr. Chairman, Member of Committee, John Chandler, Director of Criminal Affairs for the Oregon Building Industry Association, I'd be happy to. My apologies for not getting into this game a little earlier. We were unaware of the existence of the other budget note, and that's a ball drop on our part. We've been active, as well as the realtors, local government, with the advisory committee to the Transportation Growth Management Program. We set that up several sessions ago. I sit on that advisory committee. And as such, we're very interested in being able to use the funds from T21 or IST when it was started in ways that support the planning program, primarily the ways to support the planning program to make sure that the private sector is able to live with it, make it work the best it can. And apologies to you, but I was unaware that the budget note that we were sitting with was yours. I had kind of spoken to you earlier. We weren't trying to do it. Yes, ma'am. And I'll submit it on your phone. I was homesick yesterday. But caveat aside, our feeling was that the budget note that's in there currently places restrictions on the use of that T21 money that will make it difficult for it to do what we were hoping it would do in the first place, which is to help local governments comply with the state needs, especially as Senate Bill 122 intergovernmental agreements, building little land inventories in the House of 2709 several sessions ago, and other things that make it possible for development to occur within urban growth centers. And the budget note that we proposed was not attempting to take away from the transportation focus at all, so we support that, but to make it a little easier for us to use those funds for those other purposes.
That's exactly what this committee doesn't want to do. We deliberately decided in discussions in this committee to have strong language, and there's some members of this legislature who don't know whether they're going to vote for this or any other budget related to the livability and the governor's initiative and local involvement is to tie up funds. And those highway dollars are used on highways, not land use planning. And apparently your organization hasn't received that message, because we have discussed it at quite some length in this subcommittee, and it's not new to us. But we had to adopt some language that was compatible to members' concerns, or we wouldn't have got a bill out of this committee. It's that simple. Now you're asking us to change something that further jeopardizes the potential for a transportation budget.
Mr. Chairman, that's certainly not our intention. We support the transportation budget. But with regard to the issue of focus of the transportation budget, Governor Kitzhaber has said that ODOT should be a growth management agency, have a growth management function. I don't necessarily agree with that, but that is what he has said. We have state laws on the books, starting with Senate Bill 122 and intergovernmental agreements relating to infrastructure, including transportation, transportation planning rule, which LPDC promulgated in 1991, the little lands issue, which relates to compact urban form, transportation being a critical part of that. Those things are on the books already. And I understand the committee's concern, and we share it. We've been trying, since Kitzhaber said that, to try to figure out some way of getting ODOT focused more on roads rather than the land use piece, because I think there's an overlapping there that doesn't necessarily make sense. But that being said, we're still stuck in the private sector side in trying to deal with those state mandates that are on the books, trying to make sure that local governments, special districts, have their plans in place to allow development to proceed inside of river growth boundaries, making sure that we have the right tools in place to help when we get stuck with the local government with codes that don't match up, or with a state agency local government conflict. And we've been able to use this TGM program to help, to make that work better. That's not to say that we shouldn't have to do that in the first place. If I understand what you're saying, I mean, it's a concern of the committee, I understand it. And I guess what I'm trying to get across is that we support the concern, but see that using these monies in the way that we have in the past is a way of getting both the transportation focus and some of these other pieces. The land use system is intertwined with the transportation system, and we haven't been successful in untwining it.
Further questions? Somebody
else? Well, I really had a question. You're right, the governor has said that ODOT should get the compensation for management systems, and if this money were in ODOT, I wouldn't have any problem with it. but it's not. It's a VLCD. And they have rather blatant reviews. It's a non-transportation related thing. This is transportation money. So this is the surface transportation federal money. And in an $11 billion budget, and I think that no matter whose budget you take these days, I think you still at least get $11 billion. There ought to be some non-transportation related money to do land use planning.
I'm not sure which example you're referring to there, because I'm not going to respond to it.
I'm going to need to respond to that. I mean, this is my whole thing of Safeway is my client, and it's all of that stuff out of DLC. And she's telling me that they're not getting more help out of DLCD, and DLCD saying we're using this money to get more staff people out there to help them with their periodic reviews and that kind of stuff. And it's just, we don't have enough money to do the transportation related things that we need to do, and this is transportation money, and it's going pretty far afield. The language is pretty broad in the budget note as it exists. Transportation related allows you to do some land that are tied into transportation, and it's only half the money. So you got to at least get close to transportation.
Mr. McCarron, there's absolutely, in fact, I would submit that much more than 50% already is going there. The part of the concern they had with the budget note, and again, I apologize for not for doing it, just having a perception here as opposed to in your office, may well have been semantics in the sense that I don't have the current budget note in front of me, but I recall it speaks in the singular, not the plural, so that half of each grant would argue doesn't have to go for transportation things, and that as a practical matter, doesn't always work out from where the grant comes from. Half the money total in the aggregate is a different thing than half of each grant. And that's, again, a semantic thing that's really important. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I understand the book, but you want to be able to pay specific grants and use them exclusively for land use planning or that type of thing and not tie them into transportation. And I'm not, for myself, I'm not interested in doing that. It seems as though if we're going to get a transportation growth management grant out, we ought to be able to tie half of it anyway to something related to transportation, and that's all the budget might ask you to do. It doesn't say you have to put it on anything related to asphalt or driving on roads, but transportation related.
It doesn't believe in asphalt anymore now. If I may, the line between transportation and land use used to be pretty clear. Isn't anymore. And when you're locating a project, let's say, oftentimes what looks to be, or what you think to be, a simple land use decision, does this use fit on this site, should this property be used in this fashion, turns into a transportation analysis. Because that is oftentimes one, the avenue that citizens who aren't fond of the project will grab to make it not happen. And oftentimes it's simply an issue with ODOT as to access on the state highways and the amount of traffic that's going to be there. And so you inevitably have this closing. And it may well be, in fact, we talked about this prior to preparing the proposed replacement budget note, it might well be that if you were to, depending on how one defined the terms, that what we're currently doing would fit within the budget note in terms of half of them going to transportation. Because if our feeling, given that blurring of the lines in the land use and transportation, that every grant we've handed out has had something to do with transportation. Because, for better or worse, the transportation system has become one of the key drivers or key impediments, depending on what the situation is, with regard to our fulfilling the land use system. And we have parts in the metro area where we can't do what the land use system says because of the transportation system. We have parts on the coast south of your district where we've had that same problem. And what we were trying to get at with our budget mode was a little more flexibility than we thought was present in yours. Not to replace the idea at all, but to make it slightly more flexible to be able to address those issues where the transportation and land use interface got a little blurry. And I'd be happy between now and whenever Paul takes us up to sit down and chat with you some more. Again, we were not trying to back over you anyway. It was simply a miscommunication decision, but what it was.
Yes, Jordan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before you take action on the recommendation, I have one other comment that I wanted to make, and that is that the estimate that we did for the adds and the subtractions for the entire are the best that we could do at this time in the agency. We'll still need to come back to the emergency board in the interim to fine-tune the dollar amount after the bill is passed. And I would like to recommend that you also unschedule $100 million for the modernization program. If it passes and this is adopted, that $100 million be unscheduled until they're sure about the timing of the bond schedule and their actual construction plan for the bank.
Okay. Are there any questions? Send to you.
Mr. Chairman, why is it $100 million? I thought it was $600 million for the bond program.
That $600 million is for the entire biennium. The $100 million is the first issuance of the bonds, I believe. They have to come back and get expenditure authority for it.
Mr. Chair, the $600 million is over 6 years, so it's all three biennium. And the $150 million is the amount that we will sell in the first biennium, because money isn't collected to pay the bills, and it's the amount that we can accomplish in that period of time. And so the next biennium will see a larger issue of $300 million, and then that's when typically there'll be $600 million over the entire 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Another question.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman. So this list totals $100 million, or does it total $600 million?
Mr. Chairman, it will be the list, the list of projects that were presented to the House Revenue Committee, and the total on this list is actually over $600 million. These are the projects that will be considered in the SIP process, the Statewide Improvement Project Program, and they will, we'll go through that public hearing process, and the public then will make that decision which projects actually get constructed.
Mm-hmm. I have one more question, yes. Mr. Chairman. So these numbers here, if House Bill 2082 is passed, what is the total? Is this the amount of death tax that will be collected in the biennium?
That's
That's the amount. Of,
that is not the same amount of money that will be collected during the biennium. That is the amount that we will spend of the amount collected during the biennium.
So what is the amount estimated to be collected for this biennium? If the tax.
You'll have to go to the Senate Transportation Committee meeting.
They're still working out.
Oh, I thought maybe the House Committee has an estimate. But the guest tax amount is different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I might. Yeah. A lot of those dollars are going out to cities and counties in this package that's being proposed.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So they don't stay with the state of New York.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
A couple of things. One, I'm uncomfortable with the list being in the budget and its perception of the budget. I understand how the SIP process works, and I understand that the being funded by the budget, that a community can come in and say, we have an emergency, this is, awful, and this is where we want the money to go. And the SIP process and the commission could do that. But it appears to me that, I think it will appear to the public and other members of the legislature when we bring this up, that this is the list. The projects on this list are projects that need to be funded.
That's not necessarily the case, and I'd like
to... No, I know it's not.
I'd like to respond, because as you're well aware of, your language and your budget note was a delicate balance we put in here to obtain the support of some other legislators. And this pretense or post-tense or whatever tense it is there to generate a few additional votes. And so I'm just sharing with you the delicacy of what we're confronted here.
Thank you. My other question was, another one of those delicate balance things. High-speed rail and transit
They're still under discussion in the budget negotiations, and those will be dealt with in separate bills. The only thing I can assure you is death and taxes. Beyond that, I can't assure you.
These taxes aren't too sure.
No. Senator Lynn.
Yes. And just to the House Bill 2082. This is a bill for gas tax increase and a rate line tax going into effect, right? And I just want to throw out to you, Mr. Chair, I'm not supportive of this House Bill 2082, so I'm not going to support this bill. I just want to know, Mr. Chair.
Well, House Bill 2082 is in the Senate Transportation Committee.
Yeah, but this is incorporated in the 50-53.
Oh, I see what you're talking about.
Okay. This only goes into effect if Bill 2082
is passed.
It does not become part of their budget unless that bill becomes law.
I understand. Okay.
Representative Lewis. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'd like to do is try to just move this amended budget note first, and then we'll deal with the rest of the recommendations.
Okay.
So I would move amending the budget note pertaining to transportation and growth management as shown in the LFO document.
Representative Lewis now moves that the LFO recommendations consider amending the budget note pertaining to transportation and growth management as follows, and it's on the second page of LFO explanation. Is there a discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I suppose this was already explained before I came in. The reason the deduction of $2.4 million from motor carrier transportation is the reduction of administration due to repeal of rate mile tax.
Uh-huh. Yes, only a 2082 tax.
Mm-hmm. Okay, why don't we call the roll on this?
No.
Aye.
No.
No.
Aye.
Patrick?
No.
Scott?
No.
And?
No.
Motion failed.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the rest of LFO's recommendations that don't relate to that budget note that we just defeated. And that would be the recommendations shown on page 1 of 2, including adding the unscheduling of $100 million for modernization pending the bond sale. I don't know if you're worried about something like that. And it would also include the list of projects that are attached.
Okay. Representative Lewis now moves that the committee amend House Bill 5053 by adding new sections upon passage of House Bill 2082, approve $2 million in non-limited budget for debt service, $100 million reservation, add the following budget note, highway modernization program, and including the list of potential projects within each region of the state to be incorporated in the TIF. Are there any questions? Representative Starr.
I just want to real quick on this. No FTEs, including with the additional 30 million for preservation. Is there a brief explanation?
Mr. Chair, the 30 million is would go into the material if we have the FTEs for preservation.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Is there objection to the proposed amendment?
All objections.
Senator Lem will be reported as voting no. Senator Hicks records the voting no. And the motion passes. We're ready to send it out. The chair will now move House Bill 5053 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Hello.
Aye.
Aye.
Patrick.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Senator Hicks, would you like to go further?
Well,
line if you've been taken off on this life with you, okay? I'll still carry it.
Senator Dukes, would you carry it for the administration? Thank you. And the House, President Patrick. Thank you. We'll close the work session on House Bill 5063 and open the work session on House Bill 2968. You need to help from there. I'm gonna move down while we're waiting for staff to Senate Bill 1212. Mr. Nelson, would you come up to witness this? So open the work session on Senate Bill 1212. This was a bill that members will remember that it dealt with raw milk, the sale of raw milk by a dairy. The Senate chairman of this committee, having raised on raw milk, had a strong concern that I wouldn't be able to go down to my friends that own a very small dairy and buy my raw milk, especially to make ice cream with. And what this bill does is allow a person with three or fewer cows to be able to still sell raw milk, but it prevents a larger dairy from selling unpasteurized milk. And the second thing that it does, it takes out the compact language that was in the bill as it was amended in the House. So it restores it basically back to the Senate bill that was passed out of the Senate. Is that a fair explanation?
Mr. Chair, that's an excellent analysis. The B8, our Legislative Council's preferred version of the amendments. There were two amendments that were drafted, the B8 and the B9, after working with the subcommittee. The B8 amendments make it clear that it does those three things, or the two things that the chair discussed, to allow those with small numbers of cows to be able to sell raw milk to neighbors. It exempts goats, dairies from that prohibition, and then eliminates the compact from the language. The B9 simply deleted the reference in Senate Bill 1212, beef and gross, eliminated references to goat dairies, which was the exemption language which Senator Dukes had a concern about. But according to Legislative Council, the B9 leaves a conflict in statute between the prohibition and existing statute. So the B8 is the preferred to clarify that and to eliminate that conflict and still exempt goat dairies, prohibit licensed and upsized dairies from commercially selling raw milk, allows small cow or two or three cow operations to continue to do that. So the B8 is the preferred amendment on the Legislative Council.
Representative Starr. Representative Starr now moves that we adopted B8 amendments to Senate Bill 1212. Discussion. Senator Dukes.
Excuse me. Yep. You have more than 9 votes that you're milking. You have to pass your own milk. Is that what I'm understanding?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, according to Legislative Council, the B8 exempts goat dairies of any size. The 9 is a reference to other standards in the existing dairy licensing statutes.
Okay, is there further questions or discussion?
Why do we allow the raw milk to be sold? I'm not familiar with the issue, but it's concerned the health of the people in the area.
Mr. Nelson, would you like to try to answer that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, sale of unpasteurized milk has been diminishing through since the Louis Pasteur invented pasteurization processes, and there are currently 23 states that prohibit sale of unpasteurized milk in the United States. Milk can become contaminated in the handling process, and therein lies the problem of lack of pasteurization and consumption of lack of unpasteurized milk. There's still a large number of people, or a number of people, that for their own personal reasons choose to purchase unpasteurized milk from neighbors or from whoever in their neighborhood and prefer that to pasteurized milk. And that's a personal choice that they prefer to retain.
Suddenly my ignorance on this issue, if the health department, do they approve of this process, or what's the situation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lando, the Department of Agriculture has testified in support of the prohibition of sale of raw milk, as well as the Department of Health and a number of other organizations have supported the prohibition of sale of raw milk. Last week you saw in the media a salmonella outbreak from the sale of unpasteurized orange juice. Now, orange juice itself is not contaminated, but in the handling process it became contaminated with salmonella bacteria. And so that's generally the reasons for the advance of prohibitions in the sale of unpasteurized products.
Okay, so further discussion. The motion is to adopt the Dash B8 amendment to Senate Bill 1212. Is there any further discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved.
Okay.
Representative Carr.
Okay.
Representative Carr now moves Senate Bill 1212 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved. Senator Yee, would you like to carry this bill?
Exactly.
Okay. And Representative Starr, would you like to carry this bill?
Yes.
Okay. And I thank Representative Starr for your work on this, and Senator Dukes for your work on this as well.
Okay.
Senator Yee.
Thank you.
Okay, we close the work session on Senate Bill 1212 and try again on House Bill 2968. Motion Dallas.
My apologies, Mr. Chairman.
That's okay. We just want to make sure you earn your money today.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you for keeping me busy. We are on House Bill 2968.
2968.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, I'll pass on this staff measure summary and to include advertising. That its advertising includes disclaimers that lottery games are based on chance and should be played for entertainment only, and require certain information to be printed on lottery game tickets. It passed the House today and gross it was referred to Senate Trade and Economic Development Committee with a subsequent referral from Ways and Means. Reported out of Trade and Economic Development Committee with amendments that were printed up being gross with a due pass recommendation. I have attached the you have before you the staff measure summary. It has a minimal fiscal impact, so there is no fiscal impact statement. Just brought to your committee for consideration.
Okay.
And as soon as we get the deal goes to the
staff is getting a copy of the bill right now for the members.
Representative Sally.
Thank you. My question is, do you know if this will have any impact on people, whether people will play the games? Is there any idea if it will have a negative impact on the lottery revenue?
We do not.
There's no way to
put it.
I don't know how you
can change that. No, I believe it's just drafted to provide that language and disclaimer so that the public is informed that they should be playing if they're taking on this.
Okay, is there further discussion? Senator Lem, this was in your committee, this bill.
Yeah.
And it was referred down here from Trade and Economic Development Committee. Do you have any comments you'd like to say in regards to the bill?
And it didn't have to do with gambling advertisement, and I think this bill is talking about the truth in the art and winning, so this bill should pass. I think actually this bill do something good for the state and for the people. Okay?
Ms. Powell, you represent GTEP. Do you have anything to say? Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
Sunny.
I thought this was required now, the disclaimer. Isn't this disclaimer required currently?
You know, I think it's done administratively, because on some of the brochures it tells what the odds are, but some of the advertising doesn't give a full scope of what the odds are, so I think it's done administratively by the Lottery Commission now, but it's not across the board.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Representative Sire.
In line 11 of the bill, if you look at that, the language that's being deleted, it does say that the close approximation of the odds of winning some prize or some cash prizes as opposed to specific lottery games shall be depending on each ticket. So it does, current statute does say that
on the ticket, but there's a lot of advertising that goes on that says like Powerball or $50 million this week, but it doesn't tell you what the odds are 1 to 80 million to try to win it.
This actually is being built, so I'm not sure whether that's the original statute or the original
amendment. This is being built, so. And do we have any amendments?
We have those across forward.
But, Mr. Chair, my point too is that this might look like it was the original statute, but it could have been in the original bill, not having an impact.
Italic is being deleted, and the bold is being inserted in new language. Okay, so further discussion. Is there any other discussion by committee members? Representative Starr? Representative Starr moves that we send House Bill D. Engross 2968 to the full Way Committee Committee when they do pass recommendation. Is there a discussion?
There's no fiscal impact.
Minimal fiscal.
Minimal,
yeah.
Do we have a sheet that says minimal?
Go down in the file, there's just a little form that says you're concerned to have minimal fiscal impact.
Is there an objection to adopting this motion to send the full Ways and Means Committee? If not, it's been so packed. Senator Lynn, would you like to say it in the Senate?
No.
Okay. And okay, we'll close the public work session on House Bill 2968 and open the public work session on Senate Bill 782. No, we don't have any.
We didn't know. It's late last night.
how he's doing that.
Yes.
You still have to I need to go down the hall just for a minute.
No, it's fine. We'll go take a beer. That's fine.
You think it's so
important. The committee will stand in recess for a few moments while we get some information for We'll come back to order, and we're on the work session on Senate Bill 782. Now, let me, if you'd like to explain it, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 782, this is actually the second hearing. It was referred to Ways and Means, and has been a second reading on the Senate floor. It did appropriate, originally as drafted, appropriates some money to the Office of Community College and Services, for the Oregon Advanced Technology Center program. The bill was, you have before you, as drafted, it will appropriate $3,455,000. We have handed out a -2 amendment that essentially it takes out that appropriation and instead appropriates $100,000 to the Office of Community College and Services for the establishment of Oregon's Advanced Technology Center in Southern Oregon through the Oregon Advanced Technology Center program. So this is essentially reducing the appropriation that was in the original bill, and it's not as explicit as to the purpose. So the original bill said for technical project coordinators and this bill just provides seed money for the program.
And this now is $100,000?
Yes. What it does is deletes line 5, lines 5 through 16.
Okay.
And it replaces it with an appropriation of $100,000 for the program.
And you have the
-2 amendment.
Yes. Okay. Is there discussion? Representative Patrick.
Mr. Chair, this is a we've brought forward in regards to that our courts, there's six counties that's expected when it's fully up and operational to generate $30 million in regional sick wages. When it comes fully online, this is seed money to continue the project to get
Tiffany, you got more public and foundation money and private money that's out there. They got 14.8 acres that have been donated by a private individual. They have the buy-in from the Veterans Administration Center in Southern Oregon and White City. There's a lot of people that are on board on this. It's a really good economic development tool for the whole southwestern Oregon region. You can see by the co-sponsors that are on the bill, which has a wide base of support.
Might I ask, Lieutenant Hackers, which six counties is this?
Jackson, Jefferson, Douglas, Hughes, and Curry. And I think maybe Clama.
Clama.
Yes.
Is this $100,000 in addition to $3 million?
No. It's in place.
Amendment says the lead line.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for my comment, we do have an advanced technology center, I think, that operates out of Wolfville, which is great for the Portland metro area, but we have no problems with economic development here in the Willamette Valley. Well, not because we have no problems, but far less problems than our rural areas have, and I know that Southern Oregon has been hard hit by the problems with the timber industry and things like that. And I fully support doing something to help this region to be able to train people for jobs and to get more economic development into Southern Oregon. So I would just like to support this.
Okay, as a further discussion.
Mr. Chairman, but what would $100,000 do? Is this just to have an advisory committee?
Representative Patrick.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I have a letter from Harvey Bennett. I didn't realize we didn't have this in committee, otherwise I would have made letters, or I would have copied this letter to the rest of the committee in regards to this. I can just read it to tell you what it's going to do just real briefly, but basically what it's going to do is do the planning for the construction of the facility on site and use some of the money towards that. Will serve to do the initial outreach to help bring in some of the private donors and private partnerships of the 509 manufacturers that are locally within the region, many of which are brought in and get some more money from them. It also includes development for funding and the plan for the facility construction and the full delivery of services in regards to how the curriculum is going to be put together. So that's what the seed money is going to be used for. It's going to be primarily used to leverage private dollars to bring in to build the facility.
Yes.
Is this going to duplicate the programs that are being offered in community college and university in Southern Oregon?
No, sir, you just have the endorsement of the community colleges. This is a supplemental program in addition to what the community colleges are offering there to work in partnership with the manufacturers to do worker training and help fledgling and new fledgling manufacturers as well as existing manufacturers within the region reach that next plateau. And that's the purpose for doing that. For the work with the wood products, metals industries, all the other types of industries that are down there to do quality workforce training and other items.
And the Southern Oregon University is working in cooperation on this.
And
NOIC.
I'd like to add a comment that maybe in your planning stage, you can make sure that the programs do not duplicate, but complement each other.
We
have just five to be able to $1,000 to be awarded on a 20% incentive compared to any other community college. Yeah. How many communities? We have 16 or 17 community colleges throughout the state. And what's the idea of
Seventeen.
It sounds to me like, from the explanation from Representative Patrick, that there's
been land donated, and there's private sector dollars here to enhance the training that's already going on in Southern Oregon. And so this is something to spur additional economic development, really, for those manufacturing companies. But I just think that Oregon is becoming very advanced in our technology, and we should train people around the state so they'll be ready to work in various companies that are already in Oregon. And I know there's an employment problem in Southern Oregon as well. So
no question about it. The question is, what this center is the precursor system than any other community colleges. There might be the need for some of the community colleges. If someone asks me, I'd like to change this slide.
Representative Ross.
There are, and I don't know how many of them there are around the state, but there is, as I mentioned, already an advanced technology center in the metro area. And there is also one over in Central Oregon. But Southern Oregon does not have an advanced technology center, and really, I think, is badly in need of one. And this is a tiny amount of seed money that we can give to them to help launch, as Representative Patrick says, a program that can eventually generate $30 million in improved economic conditions for Southern Oregon. I don't think it's being preferential since other areas already have been, and Southern Oregon's been left out. We're just trying to kick them a leg up.
Are we talking about the, I'm not talking about the essential report letter. I'm talking about the whole total citizen community colleges. And, yes, if you could explain.
Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lynn, as Representative Hewitt said, there are other places that have received money in previous sessions and at other points in time where they've received it. We only have a finite amount of dollars. You know, we fund university buildings and other things at various points in time around the state. I view this as kind of the same thing. We have an opportunity and a really golden opportunity for the 6-county region to be involved in this. They already have 14.8 acres and a federal partnership buy-in, and they've got some private money that's coming. This just helps to leverage it. The time is right to aid the region, and compared to what was being asked for, this is to keep the project alive, keep it going, and continue to leverage those funds. So
thank you.
I guess it is, you know, yeah. It just depends on what's right at what period of time in the state, and it's right.
Is this going to lead to $3 million request next biennium?
I hope not. I hope we're going to be able to leverage a lot more private dollars to do a lot of these projects. I've had many of the companies come talk to me who are willing to put up some money. So we just need to keep the project alive and show that it, you know, shows some support there.
Okay, for further discussion. But Representative Patrick would now move that we adopt the amendment to Senate Bill 782 as the -2 amendment dated 7-8-99. Is there a discussion on this amendment? Is there opposition to this amendment? If not, it's been so approved. Representative Patrick would now move Senate Bill 782 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a dispatch recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved. Representative Patrick, would you turn to the House? And Senator Chita, would you like to say it in the Senate? Okay, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 782 and move to House Bill 2718. Relating to retired dentists.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the House Bill 2718 directs the Health Division to establish a program to purchase and maintain liability insurance for retired dentists who provide dental services to low-income patients based on their ability to pay to nonprofit corporations. The dentists will not be compensated for their services. However, there's provision in the bill for them to be reimbursed for out-of-pocket expenses and lab fees. Like. This was referred to the House Human Resources Committee with a subsequent report to Ways and Means. There is a blank appropriation in the bill. Reported out of House Human Resources Committee with a due task recommendation. You have a fiscal impact, which basically doesn't have a dollar amount because there was no dollar amount sending the bills. You have the, and also the staff measure summary. I have also provided you with, I guess, a conceptual amendment to appropriate $25,000 to the Health Division to enable it to purchase the insurance. I think the purpose of this program is to expand the availability of dental services for low-income people by utilizing the services of retired dentists who would provide their services free of cost. But I think that those dentists did need to have a liability insurance provided for their services. And this bill then, I think, is trying to minimize the cost to the state of providing those services. The $25,000 is to enable the health division to purchase the liability insurance.
All right. Are there any questions? Senator Kitsap.
I don't have any questions, but I do want to comment on this bill and the great thing that Northwest Medical Team is doing for these low-income individuals. And I've seen the presentation of these mobile clinics, and it's amazing how much good they do with the limited resources. They're just able to just do so much. I remember going to a presentation after we had been in session last time and seeing how we deal with so many millions of dollars for this and that project, and to see how Northwest Medical Team was able to do these clinics for such a low amount. And so I think this is a very worthy thing that we're doing here, because they need to be covered by insurance for the disability people. But,
well, I'd like to echo that too, because I had the privilege of meeting Mr. Ron Post, that manages this program, the dental program, the Northwest Medical Team. And if there ever was a young person who actually and literally put his heart and soul into some project, it's that. And for those medical providers or dental providers who provide the service without compensation, it's kind of fulfilling the direction that our government at the federal and state level have decided to take, and that is including more people involved there. And I think the least we can do is help offset some of the costs, and the cost is buying the liability insurance on a retired dental person to perform these necessary services. So with that,
Mr. Chairman.
Cindy.
So is this to provide free dental services for the people who are not covered by OMEP?
They're not covered by anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's kind of safety net.
Yeah. It's an attempt to provide a level of service, dental care, that would preclude it from going into serious medical problems later and then coming under indigent care.
Mm-hmm. But they're not covered by OMEP.
No.
Thank you for sure.
Senator Lynn.
I love your commitment team there, that really good group of people that giving service not only local, state, but it's worldwide.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then they need a push back up from us. So I'm sure they will do that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, their headquarters are in my district.
Yeah.
I still support him.
Representative Patridge.
Mr. Chair, at this point, I'd move the conceptual amendment on line 10 of page 2, deleting the blank dollar amount and inserting $25,000.
Representative Patridge now moves that the committee adopt the LFO conceptual amendment to provide $25,000. On line 10, we would delete the blank amount and insert $25,000. Is there discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been called through.
Chair.
Representative Patrick.
I move House Bill 2718 with the conceptual amendment to the full committee with a two-pass recommendation.
Representative Patrick now moves House Bill 2718 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a two-pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so ordered. Can you get up this is in your district? Would you like to carry it?
Very much.
In the floor and in the Senate?
Yes. Please.
And
Mr. Chair, I would like to recommend that Representative Williams be a
okay. All right. Representative Williams in the House. Okay, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2718 and open the work session on Senate Bill 634.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jamie is passing out the fiscal impact and staff measure summary, as well as the conceptual amendment to the bill. Senate Bill 634.
Excuse me, just the dash two amendments that we sent down your office.
Liz?
Okay. Can I answer? Well, you can pass out the bill when I'm there. I want to ask this. Oh, is this for the financial? Oh, it's the statement. Okay, I think the wrong thing.
The bill, Senate Bill 634 allows libraries to receive grant funds and to use funds for public education purposes and library services for children. It basically expands a grant program for libraries to include school libraries and a number of other things for automated shared catalogs and inter library borrowing services and electronic information systems in K-12. So the purpose of the bill is just to expand the number of the purposes for which grants can be given to libraries for education purposes. This was referred to the Senate Education Committee with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means because of the appropriations in the bill, like appropriations reported out of the Senate Education Committee with a two-pass again, those funds. I had a conceptual amendment, but I believe there's a dash two, which.
Jamie's going to bring the dash two amendment. It removes the language contained in section. One and section two, excuse me, and create section three as section one, and it inserts $350,000. Is that correct?
Okay.
Section four would be $350,000. Section five. Yeah, $360,000. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And section six. So the back side of the page two, would the four sections there would be renumbered section one, two, three, and four. Section 3 as section 1 and then the emergency. Okay, Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this amendment does is it references ORS 357-740, which is the statewide ready-to-read program. What this would do would be add an additional, now we get 75 cents a child throughout the state of Oregon with emphasis on preschool programs to public libraries to facilitate outreach programs, including the purchase of books and other ready-to-read kinds of programs for aimed at preschool-age children for ready-to-read to in an effort to help prepare them as they move into school age, as well as aid the entire education system as a result of this. This is only to be done through your public library, the Library Association,
have requested this. Oregon ranks third in the nation in per capita circulation of books out of our public libraries in the entire country. Yet we're almost at the bottom of the list in terms of the amount of money that the state puts towards, or locals put towards our public libraries. This is an outreach program for Ready to Read. It impacts thousands of students throughout the state of Oregon. And for those who attended some of the brain research on brain development, things that Frank Cyrus C-Sub was involved with, as well as Representative Cruz and some others, it's critically important that we get books in the hands of kids before they go to school, and we help with parents helping them with skills to make available to teach children how to read. A recent study from University of Birmingham in which 400 children were tracked and given library cards, and he read for a half hour every day prior to going to school. They were given baseline tests when they were put into school. They were found to read two levels above their contemporaries as a result of the use of their local public libraries. Just in Jackson County, where I'm from, which gets about a $20,000 Ready to Read grant for our entire library system. We leverage that. We have 332 separate programs that part of that Ready to Read money is used in. Last year, we had 10,488 children in one part of the program, and then we have a story time program within our local libraries and all our branch libraries. They had 660 story times. This is 12,659. I like this program.
You're talking and you jeopardize your future.
I like the Ready to Read program too. My question is on our this legislative summary. It looks to me like we're essentially replacing the bill for Ready to Read enhancement, rather than what this 634 said. This, the first page of this report said affected amendments are none.
That was what came out of the
April 6th.
That was
what came out of the when we get to wherever we need to go with the bill,
there'll be a new testing.
There will be a budget report. That's what it would have said. Because of the appropriation, we have a budget report.
Representative, is there further discussion? Representative Patridge now moves that we adopt the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 634. Is there discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved. Representative Patridge now moves Senate Bill 634 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I feel $350,000 could be used in human resources or some funds that we need. So I'm going to vote a courtesy yes, but I want to think more about this.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Is there further discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved. We'll close the work session and send it on 634. Okay. Representative Patridge, committee in the House. So I think I have to
I just like to mention, Mr. Chair, while we're at a 5, the human resource budget has increased over 12% from last year.
Well, I do have other programs I'd rather see funded. So
I'm getting some of you, but I feel like I've got to hold a press conference on the increases in human resources. So that
we will now open the work session on House Bill 2354 related to special elections.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the subcommittee, being distributed to you now is a copy of ASO Special 2354 and a packet of materials that includes the staff major summary from the House Committee on Judiciary, which passed this out back in April.
I've also attached an updated fiscal impact statement, which reflects -88 amendments, which are in front of you for information purposes. You will need to further amend the measure if you wish to go forward with this. And also attached with the -88 amendment is a matrix of, it's a two-page chart, which describes the purpose of the bill, really. And that is that the measure establishes a November 2nd, 1990 special election, which would receive a variety of referrals from the Assembly. The chart that I'm distributing to you that lists 13 measures plus an item that I've hand-amended into my list as of about 9 o'clock this morning. These are measures that are likely to appear on this November ballot. These bills are the ones, or proposals are the ones that have gotten through at least one committee. Many, 6 of them have made it through both chambers. Information provided by Legislative Council first thing this morning indicated that HJR 31 has been amended in the, I believe it was the House Public House Rules Committee yesterday, which would create a substitute for HJR 91. And of the remainder measures, they are all at some point in the process, which would indicate they could well appear on this November ballot. The bill has to accomplish several things in order to conclude the election sequence. The language of the bill was is old at this point, and it reflects only one particular measure that was intended to be sent to the ballot with this bill. What the bill will need to be amended to do is to reflect all of the measures that are on the chart that are likely to appear, and with caveat language that will say that this is the measure that will appear on the ballot if it is referred to the people by the Legislative Assembly, so that it covers the base. In the event that any of them don't show don't make it through the entire process, then they won't appear on the ballot. Nothing forces it if they're not adopted by the Assembly. And Legislative Council has also asked for an amendment which clarifies in Section 2 that that the measures referred to in Section 1 will be submitted, but that they are the ones that are referred by the Legislative Assembly. Other sections of the bill have a trigger date for the process that requires the preparation of ballot title, financial estimate, and explanatory statement. The Legislative Assembly, do have the opportunity to complete that particular set of tasks, but if they do not by a date certain, then another process kicks in. And that date is August 16th, as suggested by Secretary of State. Secretary of State and Legislative Council, however, would like to talk about the potential for another opportunity there and to give the Secretary's office advance time to get into their process in the event they are the ones who have to do it, given the large number of proposals. Another item that needs to be amended is in Section 6, and it has, again, to do with a date that is part of the technical process, and the Secretary is suggesting that it allows the date set by the Secretary of State by rule in Section 6 of the measure having to do with arguments being submitted, being filed with the Secretary. Again, that would, by having the date set in rule, that would allow the Secretary to work with some flexibility to get the number of, get the arguments filed and be able to get them processed into the voter's pamphlet. And speaking of the voter's pamphlet, this is a special election that creates a brand new activity that is not normally scheduled in the Secretary of State's budget. So this is not an item that they typically budget for. The fiscal impact statement that I provided you is based on yesterday's evaluation of the number of likely measures to appear on the ballot. Recognizing that there is a continuing amending of measures to move ballot dates. Some proposals have come through starting off with this November date and have opted to go to a primary or general. In some cases, they started out at a primary or general election that they would be going to and then decided, but once we see that the election is clear to go, let's pull it on to the November 99 ballot. If any of those occur between now and the end of session, the cost could rise. At this point, we do have the direction from the co-chairs was based on the fiscal impact information that I had yesterday morning, which was before we finalized the data for how many measures might appear. At this point, they have indicated that this committee subcommittee could amend 2354 to provide $1.4 million to the Secretary of State for this special election. The fiscal impact information that is based, however, on the number of measures and the nature of the measures, and using the experience of the previous ballot on which the victims' rights measures were proposed, and using the number of arguments that were submitted, they estimate that the voter's pamphlet may be as large as 120 pages. 100 is at the low end of that range. That requires a different kind of process for preparation of the voter's pamphlet. It includes binding. That bumps the cost up. There is some revenue that flows to the Secretary for the filed ballot argument. That they estimate, again, based on the experience with these measures and other $62,400. And with that, I would take any questions.
Are there any questions of staff?
The only one I have, Adrian,
is
on the -8A8 amendment.
Mm-hmm.
What are all these? Are these the crime victims initiatives that are being listed here?
Mr. Chair and members, yes. The AAs were drafted at a time when the proposals for those measures had been split out from the original measure they had been contained within. They had originally been in one HJR with the specific language, if I recall correctly, saying that they were to be treated as individual proposals. Subsequent to that, the measures were extracted into their own individual HJR. So the concept in the -A8, and I would not recommend that you adopt A8, but rather take a look at the principle here is that we're going to name the measures that appear on this chart as the ones that we believe are going to appear on the ballot, which would effectively substitute for Section 1. And they would show this language if this HJR is referred to the people by the Legislative Assembly. So it leaves open the door that they might not be. And hence would not appear.
Okay, the reason I was asking this question is there's one of the issues, HR 91, was defeated on the floor of the Senate this week, and now it's been resurrected in HR 31.
Correct.
So, I know, but did it still go to the ballot, or with these, with this language?
That's my understanding.
Okay. Pardon me, Representative Scott?
It has to pass. But it came out yesterday as I ruled.
Okay.
So again, this would be, it could be, or would be included with that caveat language if it is referred to the people. So that it, so that we get as many that we know of, or we get all of those that we know of in here now, it would probably be wise at the end of the process to maybe hold it for the end, so that any more that may be revised along the way to add to this ballot can be accommodated in the final language.
Yes, I
have a question about the base cost of an election, because it's my understanding that there is sort of a base cost, and then when you add additional measures to it, the cost is not all that much. And so I think, of course it varies with what the subject matter is, but I think the committee needs to understand that the cost isn't so high simply because there are so many. There is an additional base cost, which is pretty high cost, and then added to it, each thing has an estimated dollar amount to measure. Is that correct?
That's correct. I don't have the number of what the core infrastructure of just setting up the election and establishing a voter's pamphlet. There are some basic costs of just creating the core of the document, as well as the procedures for setting the date and operating the election.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Lewis.
Yeah, I guess I would have a question regarding that. We budgeted $1.4 million for this, but I noticed on the fiscal impact statement that it shows $1.7
million. Mr. Chair, certainly, Representative Lewis. The impact statement that I provided to you is on the basis of the -A8 amendment, which, as I pointed out, are not necessarily to be adopted by this subcommittee, but the principles that are in it need to be. And the impact statement that I had previously received from the Secretary of State's office was on the basis of the bill as it appeared back in April, when it only had one item referred to it. On revisiting the measures which are now slated to go to the November 2nd ballot, we've got 13 items, which then add volume to the voter's pamphlet. And it's on the basis of the numbers and the nature of the measures. And the Secretary of State used assumptions based on their experience with the victims' rights proposals, which make up half of this slate of measures going to the ballot. And using that experience and the numbers of ballot arguments filed, they revisited the numbers so that we could correlate to what the workload was actually going to be. And these are the numbers that they provided to me yesterday after we conferred on the list.
Okay, as a further discussion,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Lynn.
And in this fiscal, let me see, yes, fiscal, put by the legislative fiscal office, the ballot measure 30. What's the ballot measure 30? This bill is not anticipated to have any effect on the activities of the cities, counties, and special. Could you explain to me what that means?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Lynn, ballot measure 30 was adopted by a vote of people about 4.5 years ago, and it is a measure that directs the legislative assembly to consider the fiscal impact of bills on local government, and to determine whether there may need to be compensation or reimbursement to the local governments for the program or service increases or additions that a bill creates on those jurisdictions. In this case, measure of House Bill 2354 doesn't create any cost to the government. That has measure 30 implications.
Yeah, right, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
But if this the data is counted at the county, how could we say they don't have any fiscal impact at all for the local jurisdiction? I'm sure that will be some expenses, and by saying it, there's no expenses involved in it, I couldn't understand.
Thank you for that question, Senator Lim. I will double-check my ballot measure 30 flow list. I don't believe elections are included, that they are exempt from the provisions. There are a number of things that are exempt from ballot measure 30, including any issue that affects schools, for instance, school districts. Those are automatically excluded. Items having to do with crime, creating new crimes and so forth, are also excluded.
Okay. Is there further discussion? The chair would now move that we adopt the LFO recommendations. Yes.
Thank you. Just with one qualifier, if I might, and at your direction, certainly. The one suggestion having to do with the August 16th date, there is one suggestion that Legislative Council and the Secretary would like to mention, and because we just talked about this about 25 minutes ago, I might not have it totally in my brain here, but it has to do with the process, again, that fall under Section 3, 4, and 5 that have to do with preparing the ballot title, financial estimate, and explanatory statement. If the legislature does not complete a process of its own by August 16th, this would the August 16th date is the trigger at which the defined process in the bill would kick in. The Secretary of State, in looking at the potential for signee die in the next fill-in-the-blank number of days, but relatively soon, felt that if language were inserted, and this would have to be somewhat conceptual, but Legislative Council is here, to not preclude the legislature's own responsibilities and authorities under the proposal, but if the legislature were to leave signee die, before this August 16th date, then language, if inserted, would allow the Secretary of State to get started right away if you hadn't completed your process, so that they could have a few extra days even to get moving on going through the forming of the explanatory committees and the hearings process that they do for that, the rules and so forth, and to get that moving, again, because of the number of measures that are going to the ballot.
Okay. Is there further discussion or questions? The chair would move that we adopt the LFO amendment to House Bill 2354 from the explanation dated July 10th, 1999, from Legislative Fiscal Analyst Adrian Sexton. The bill would do several things in Section 1, also amend Section 2, in Section 3, 4, and 5, insert the trigger date in Section 6, excuse me, and Section 10 on page 3, line 35, insert $1,400,000. Is there further discussion? Senator Yee.
Mr. Chairman, this $1.4 million provides for elections in November 1999. What about the primary election in year 2000? Do we have money to provide for that too?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, the Secretary of State's office routinely budgets for the primary and general elections each biennium that is contained in their base budget.
Oh, this is special.
This is special. Okay.
Okay.
What is this
here? Senator Lim. So this amount is total the 13 midgets we are talking about?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, that is the assumption. We have reason to expect that the cost might actually be higher. But again, based on the likelihood of 13 measures, the cost will probably be between 1.4 and 1.7 million.
Which is including HJR 31, I guess.
Correct. As a substitute for HJR 91.
Okay, is there further discussion? Is there objection to this amendment? Not if this is all approved? Senator Duke?
I just want to comment that I'm going to support this because the legislature has chosen to put all these things on the ballot, and it's not really the 13 of them out. We're not out of here yet. I don't care, I want to be around when the voters get the voters pamphlet for that general election, and it's going to be us that causes it to go into the second or third booklet. I think that we have to be handling some of these issues on our own, but that's not the issue under discussion.
You have to realize, I think, Senator, that for the November special election, part of this was actually, I believe, caused by the Supreme Court declaring the crime victims major, which was passed overwhelmingly by the voters in, what was that, 1996. And they declared it unconstitutional, and it is the court who said you have to split this into separate sections. So there are, I believe, eight of these ballot measures are just to get back what the people voted for on the crime victims measure.
And I understand that. We just need to be putting more than usual out ourselves.
Okay. Representative Patrick.
Sure, thank you. I also want to point out the all constitutional amendments, but we can't.
That.
So we can't. We, even if we wanted to, we couldn't.
But they don't all need to be constitutional.
Okay.
Okay, Representative Patridge now moves that we send House Bill 2354 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved. Senator, would you like to carry the ballot measure?
Okay.
Would you carry that before the poll and the Ways, or Ways and Means and the full Senate?
Okay.
And Representative Patrick, would you move it over to the House? Okay, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2354. Open the public work session on House Bill 3615. Okay, Mr. Olson, House Bill 3615, relating to CUC.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3615 was before you on Thursday. We have a pass today. It requires the governor to appoint one of the members of the Public Utility Commission as chairperson. It also requires the governor to appoint an interim task force to study the structure of the Public Utility Commission and determine what changes to the structure of the commission are necessary. And there is no fiscal impact to the -3 amendment, I suppose.
Is there further discussion,
Mr. Chair?
Senator Lim.
If they are going to study of this issue, why at this time that the designated governor to appoint the chair? Are we putting the before the court or what's the situation?
Rick, would you like to respond to that?
Well, I can certainly try. The original bill was to transfer the Public Utility Commission to the Department of Consumer Business Services and to expand the Public Utility Commission to 5 members. I believe the -3 amendment is somewhat of a compromise to that position and leave the PUC as three members, but give the governor the authority to appoint, and at the same time study the issue, and then have that report back to the 71st legislative session.
So my question is, instead of the study, what's the authority to appoint the sheriff appointed by the governor?
Mr. Chair, Senator, then that's the question that's before you. It's to be decided.
Could someone explain to me the why that has to be before?
Is there anyone as a proponent of this bill in the room? Ms. Wyatt, from the governor's office, would you like to come forward?
Senator Glenn, Mr. Chairman, my name is Bill Wyatt. I'm chief staff of the governor. Really, I think these two pieces of the bill exist for separate purposes. It's been our position during this governor's term that the state agencies ought to be administered by people who have complete and exclusive responsibility to manage their agencies, and to the greatest extent possible, they ought to report directly to the governor. And in many cases that is so, and in many cases that is not so. There are an extraordinary number of large, important agencies whose executive director, if you will, don't report to the governor. And so we've just consistently taken the position that agency managers should report to the governor. In the case of the Public Utility Commission, it is now a three-member commission. There was a day when there was a single commissioner who managed that agency and who was held accountable for the management of that agency. In the case of the PUC, we now have three individuals who, in theory, share that duty. And it's our view that that's tough. And I think the model that we looked at when we were approached originally, I believe, by Representative Hill, was the Employment Relations Board, which is much smaller, albeit deals with very contentious issues, where there is a chair who is appointed as chair by the governor, and who is essentially the agency manager. The other two members of the Employment Relations Board then act in their usual quasi-judicial roles along with the chair on the issues that come before them. But the chair is essentially the executive director of the agency and therefore responsible for developing the budget, hiring, firing, managing, etc. So you know who to hold accountable. Now, the other aspect of this bill, the study, is really somewhat unrelated, although we think important, because the business, in fact, this session of the legislature is likely to act on two measures, which will really set the stage for the future of utility regulation, both on the electric side and on the telecommunications side, where the PUC is going to become, frankly, more of a referee than a regulator. And we felt that warranted created an opportunity to step back and say, how has this world changed? What other sorts of changes might we think about as we think about the future for both electric and telecommunications? And so that was really the essence of that proposal. There have been a lot of concerns expressed. I suspect individuals have talked to you about the potential for political interference in the operations of the Public Utility Commission as a result of this change. We would be quite open to considering a modification which would essentially work like this, and that is that the chair, who would otherwise be a member of the commission, would serve for a term of 2 years, removable for cause. The cause removal comes from the old system where the former director, this is back before the three-member commission existed, you could remove the commissioner for cause, which means you have to have a reason, you have to express that publicly, and it has to be one that could stand up in court. And if that would make people feel more comfortable, we'd be happy to do that.
Is there any further questions?
Yes, that's cool, Mr. Renton. And the reporting process, will the staff report, do they report to the three commissioners or just one to the chair?
they would report to the chair. The chair would be the executive director of the agency, and so they would report to the chair. Obviously, just like the Employment Relations Board or other like boards in state government, they have policy roles which require them to speak to all of the commissioners, and presumably that would continue. But the chair would be responsible for the day-to-day management and operation of the agency.
My concern is the three members of the commission, they are equally important to the job. Even the chair might be appointed by the governor, but when the reporting goes to the chair only, the two might be left out not knowing what's going on. Then in the decision-making process, they might not make a good decision. That's my concern.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are two sets of decisions here. One is, as I call it, the day-to-day management operation of the agency, the hiring and firing, and then there are the policy decisions that come before the commission in a quasi-judicial role. And if the two other members of the commission aren't, you know, sufficiently informed, then decisions aren't going to get made, and the chair is going to find himself or herself in a fairly awkward position. And so they still have all the rights and responsibilities as quasi-judicial officials acting on those matters that properly come before the commission. But with a three-member commission, no two of them can easily get together to discuss the day-to-day operations of the agency because of the public meetings law. It's very difficult and very awkward. And it's our view that it makes sense to have a single individual who is accountable for the operations of the PUC as an agency of state government. It is that as well.
Thank you.
It could be reappointed. Someone else could be appointed, but they would serve as chair for 2 years. So it'd be a term certain, basically, and during that term would be removed only for cause.
How attached are you to the language in this amendment that says that the chair would hire, reassign, and coordinate personnel?
We're pretty attached, I guess that's your phrase, pretty attached to that for the reason that I articulated, and I know that there is great discomfort among some with that, but this is something about which we feel pretty strongly. There are three branches of government, not four or five, and we think that it's important to have people in a position to be accountable for the day-to-day management operation of agencies. And if you're not responsible, you don't have those legal responsibilities, it's tough to figure out who's responsible.
We just passed 1149.
Right.
And we're giving it to the PC. Essentially, they will write all of the rules over the next 2 years. And I think you're opening the door here to the real possibility of a major change in staff. And I for one person in directing how they do their business and plan and everything. It's a risk I don't think we can afford to take.
Okay, further questions? Thank you, Mr. White.
Thank you.
We are in a work session, and are there any amendments that we have to adopt here?
The dash three amendment.
Senator Duke.
I have no idea where the members are, so let me throw this out and we'll see if it's going.
Okay.
I'm going to move that we amend the dash 3 amendment to Article 3615 by removing lines 12 and 13. Those are the two lines that give the chair the authority to, the sole authority to direct the staff.
Okay, you've heard the motion by Senator Duke. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Yee.
So if the chair does not have the power to hire or coordinate personnel of the commission, who has the authority?
The full commission will just be able to
Is there further discussion? If not, the question called. If not, the question is before Senator Duke's motion to insert -3 amendments and delete that the commission chairperson would be responsible for hiring and managing staff. Clerk, call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Ma'am?
No.
Aye.
No.
Star?
No.
Aye.
No. The motion fails. Now, the amendment is to adopt the -3 amendment, identified as 63099. Is there further discussion? If not, is there objection to adoption of the amendment?
Yes.
Senator Ditz votes no, and will be recorded as voting no.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lim?
Yes. It's still to look for amendments.
You're supposed to have a copy of them in front of you.
Okay, this one.
This is the best.
The -3 amendment. Okay, is there further objection? If not, it's been adopted. Chair would now move House Bill 3615. As amended to the full weight news committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
I'm going to provide a courtesy yes vote, but I want to think some more about this.
Okay. All right. Is there further discussion? Is there objection?
Yes.
Senator Duke will be recorded as voting no and all others aye, and the motion passes. Senator, let's see, Lim, would you like to pay? And Representative Starr, need to put you to work today. All right. Pardon? Okay, that's fine. Representative Butler. Another carry in the full committee. All right, we're going to be in recess, and before we recess, we have one more bill coming up at 11:35. Senate Joint Resolution 11 will be up at 11:35. We posted this. You've just been given information that we will be meeting at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, prior to the 4th.
What afternoon?
Tomorrow afternoon.
4 o'clock.
Four is a four. And we have to go through the lottery appropriation bills. The amendments are not finished yet. And tomorrow afternoon, we have to adopt the appropriation for the lottery funds allocation. This historically has always been the Christmas tree bill. And it's a pumpkin this year instead of a Christmas tree bill. And so, no, the eggs are missing. But there's going to be certain allocations that we have to discuss. And because staff cannot get the amendments on the morning from legislative council and double check them, we had to
twice and
yeah.
Making sure everybody tonight.
It's gonna be a Christmas list regardless. Anyway, it'll be at 2 PM tomorrow afternoon in this committee room prior to the full committee at 4. And I apologize, I wrecked your Sunday.
Well, I hope I can be excused. I have to go home and make some arrangements with my family.
Okay.
And I can't get back in tomorrow. Seeing how I'm not leaving until whatever time I get to leave.
No, that's fine. Pardon me,
do you go to a bar Saturday at Lynn?
I like to.
You like to?
And if not, I'll bless you when you send me. All right. Is there further discussion? We are in recess until 11:35, which is 1/2 hour from now, and then we'll be taking up Senate Resolution 11. A.M. And the scheduled hour and appointment is the consideration of a work session on Senate Joint Resolution 11. Members will recall we had House Joint Resolution 59 this past week, and it was defeated by a vote of the committee. To reconsider that would have taken a vote or motion to reconsider the vote. Since that was highly unlikely, we have chosen the vehicle of Senate Joint Resolution 11 to further discuss the issue of. Jeff, would you like to please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I've provided you a memo with the amendments that Representative Gianella would like to have considered to be placed in Senate Joint Resolution 11. This is the amendment that the committee approved for House Joint Resolution 59. I'm recommending then that you just insert that in Senate Joint Resolution 11. And that will take care of it.
We will take the amended language and excuse me, after Resolution 59 and insert in its entirety and SCR 11.
Yes. If you'd like me to read it for the record,
would you please?
The amendment is to add in Section 3A in Subsection 2, insert the following language as subparagraph E, may also be used for the policing of public highways, roads, streets, and roadside rest areas. Revenues authorized to be used under this paragraph may be used only to increase the budget for police agencies in order to provide levels of service not authorized by their budget in effect on the effective date of this amendment.
Okay, Representative Gianella, would you like to let the witness stand, please? Are there any questions by committee members? Senator Duke?
Well, can I bring Captain?
Yes.
My notes may be wrong, but according to my notes, this came out of transportation for Ways and Means, and in transportation we amended it. On line 7, to have policing by the Oregon State Police. I just remember that was an issue as to whether it was going to be the state police or open to local police as well when we had the last discussion. The amendment appears to be drafted to the broader police. And my notes may be wrong, but that's the way I remember it. I mean, that's what my notes say. It came out of transportation. So I just want to raise that question.
Senate Joint Resolution 11 came out on line 7, page 1. You delete the word and insert use and policing the public highway. So
by the Oregon State Police.
Pardon me?
By the Oregon State Police did not get
an
amendment.
No.
Chair, in house,
Yeah, in the House Transportation Committee, it did get amended to narrow it to Oregon State Police. But in this subcommittee, when we considered the amendment, we took that back out.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir. Senator Lynn.
So, the amendment is here, the police agency means what that means?
City, county, state police.
And so, we just open up with the case with this amendment?
Yes. Representative Package.
Chair, just a real quick clarification on Senate Resolution 11. And we did 59 before. Are we taking out and the use of policing on line 7?
No.
I'm concerned because what we're doing, though, is we're duplicating. We're adding, if we're going to amend it, and put in, they also be used for policing on public highways. And then you already have policing on line 7 above. I'm just concerned it's redundant. And especially since this is a constitutional amendment. Because 59 didn't have that. The original resolution that was proposed didn't have that.
Mr. Chair, that's true. The only thing, the other thing that does is that it instructs the agency to use those monies to increase budgets, not to backfill. So you could take out the first sentence if you wanted to. Either way, it works.
Okay, Representative Scott.
I think we should take and policing rephrase and line 7 just so that we don't, we aren't repetitive and not confusing. I would make that motion. Line 7, rephrase the bracketed and delete the bold and policing.
Representative Starr now moves that on line 7 the word and be reinstated and that the word and policing be deleted.
Mr. Chair, the effect of that makes this joint resolution identical then to House Joint Resolution 59.
Correct.
With the amended language in of the last paragraph.
Is there further discussion? Is there further discussion? Is there objection to the amendment? That has been so approved.
Okay.
Representative Carr.
I move the telephone recommended amendment.
Okay. Representative Carr now moves the LFO amendment is read by LFO to Senate Joint Resolution 11. Is there a discussion? Senator Gradue.
I know people believe that by putting the language, writing it the way it's written here, that it will prohibit that feeling. It won't. What you've done is you set a floor so that if it passes, it passes in 2000, November of 2000, so it doesn't affect this budget. And this is the only budget. I mean, as long as they have appropriated as much money to the state police as they do this biennium, then the legislature can use the rest of the money to backfill. But I don't think you're going to get enough state police out of this. I think all you're going to do is bring the legislature. I mean, I support the state police all the way through this process, and voters pay them in every budget that they're in, and they are in many. But I see this as a drain, and it's going to allow local governments and the state, even the legislature, to backfill, and I don't think we're going to get any more out of it.
And Representative Passage.
Mr. Chair, this only provides a different method of funding that
was proposed for you to then take that out. We'd have to change the statute in order to backfill the use of it. My understanding is the way the formula is set up, I'm saying, I mean, maybe we could use that, we could just take the money off the road, so, yeah, but it would only be for additional money, it would be for
you. Is there further discussion? Senator Lim?
Yeah, I'm very supportive of the state troopers, but this amendment opening up to the each county and city, I'm not sure that we are what we are trying to do. But, I mean, taking away higher money to going into the city counties and whole places. I have some questions. I hope someone can clarify what it is.
Staff, would you try to respond to Senator Lynn?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Lynn. The resolution, if adopted by the voters, does not automatically give money to city counties for policing, but it would allow them to use the allocation that they already get for their police forces.
So this is not mandatory, though.
No.
The legislature could allocate additional money if that's their choice.
So it's the legislative decision to make that.
That's correct.
So can I hear from the state officials on this issue, too?
Yes. Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lim, that is correct, as staff has described. It will be permissive then and allow the state legislative body to choose whether or not to use funds out of Highway Transportation Fund for the purpose, and for the record, Captain Bob Smith, Oregon State Police, to use those funds for more state troopers. With the approval of the vote of the people first, then in that same and like kind, with the approval of the voters, the city and county governments will have that same opportunity to make that decision on how to use those funds. So it opens an opportunity that does not mandate, and it ends up being a may use this, and it is a state decision for state police and a local decision, local government decision for city and county, the chief, and for the sheriff.
So this opens up any unlimited amount of money of the highway fund could go into the police agencies, or could they have any limitations on it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, it does open it up, and it opens it up from the standpoint then that local governments get an opportunity to choose and decide on the accessibility of the funds or the use of the funds. That, and to answer direct, it does not have a cap, but I think the cap gets established through the policymakers of the state and the policymakers and the citizens of the communities on how they want to choose to use those dollars.
Thank you.
Okay, are there further questions?
I'm Representative Snodgrass.
Welcome, new member. Representative Snodgrass, I apologize, Speaker.
Actually, I'm not sure I need to direct it to you or the staff. Is there a definition for policing in the Constitution at some point so we know what policing means? And the reason I ask that question is because when we police our grounds, we pick up trash. And I just want to clarify that we're not backfilling other parts of a policing potential, especially since the line previous was talking about construction, reconstruction, et cetera. The objective is police, not picking up other things. So if there's a definition for policing, then I don't have a problem with it. If it's not, then, perhaps we need to do something, maybe rearrange the order or add the fine by.
I believe, now, staff can correct me if I'm wrong. When I introduced the Senate Joint Resolution 11, Excuse me. I had a former sheriff serve in the Senate ask that the bill be amended to include and policing those monies, if decided upon by local government, could be used for city and county police. This senator was not opposed to the concept of including it in the fund, but wanted to know it being retained by cities and counties as well as the state police. That was the reason for the initial issue of the language when I came to the legislative council and having it drafted that way, was to address the issue.
Chair Hannon, there's a definition in the Constitution. If it would have happened and became a part of the Constitution, the legislature would have to define that.
A follow-up question, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We're under discussion of the suggested LFO language. And the first line says, may also be used for policing of public highways. Perhaps instead of using the word policing, we could use police work of public highways. A little bit more specific than the term policing, which is the...
Mr. Chair, if I might, and Representative Snodgrass, we could insert law enforcement policing of the highways. And then that would draw a specific definition to the function of enforcement, of policing enforcement.
What did you say?
Sorry, I don't. We're talking about policing by sworn officers of public highways, but.
I as mayor don't believe I'd want to face this committee after doing something like that.
It may seem like a silly question, but I really feel like it needs to be as specific as possible if the intent truly is to get more law enforcement where they will be wanted.
And Chair Hannon, in my thinking through that process, you could put in sworn law enforcement officers for policing of. And that way, the intent of it is where the state police really wants it to be, is for those officers that police those state highways. And I know as well for city and counties that is the nexus between the functions of the Highway Trust Fund, and it is for the safety on the road. It is not for other functions of government.
And you know that here in this room, I can't. However, the administrative role of the application of something potentially.
Yes, Senator Dinn.
Are the guests considered sworn officers?
They have Chair Hannon, Senator Duke. They are sworn in with certain capacity and function. I believe they could. Yeah.
Okay, is there further discussion? If not, the Speaker of the House proposes an amendment to LFO recommendation in Section 3A, Subsection 2, add the following language. May also be used for sworn law enforcement officers for policing of public highways, roads, streets, roadside rest areas. Is there further discussion? Is there objection?
For the amendment.
Okay, Senator Duke will be noted as voting no. Is there any further objection? If that has been so approved. Senator Cuta.
I just wanted to mention that I'm giving the courtesy for this particular item to move it on from this committee to full and then to the floor. I cannot promise we'll capture this point.
Yes, I appreciate that. Is there any further discussion? Yes, the representative.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, could I just point out that we had 42 yeses in the House when this went through the House of Representatives, and 5 would have been yeses that were in the committee, including myself, so with no opposition on the House side.
Okay. And the chair would entertain one more motion, and that is to add Representative Gianella as a co-sponsor of the Senate Joint Resolution 11. Representative Gianella introduced HCR 59, and we were not able to resurrect that, and I would ask for courtesy that we extend to her by adding your name as a co-sponsor. Is there any objection to that? That has been so approved. Representative Starr now moves Senate Joint Resolution 11 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a new pass recommendation. Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
I have
that
look.
Aye. We are adjourned until 2 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, prior to the full Ways and Means Committee, to do the lottery allocation fund. This is the trick or treat bill. So, those of you who want to be treated, please be present at 2 o'clock. Those of you that want to be tricked, don't care. And we'll see you at 2 o'clock tomorrow.